This is Brian Cambria with news for the Western Slope, Tuesday, September 24th, 2013. Thousands of natural gas wells in Weld County remain inundated by floodwater days after the devastating rains that decimated much of the Front Range. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is tracking 10 oil spills in flood-affected areas. Two of those, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission classifies as notable. Both are spills from Anadarko storage tanks and together have spilled almost 20,000 gallons of oil into the floodwaters. EchoFlight flew KDNK's Ed Williams over Weld County last Thursday morning to report on the damage to the fracking infrastructure. Here he talks to Weston Wilson, former EPA official and natural gas expert, about the impact of the floods.
Tell me what your reaction was to what you just saw up there.
Well, we obviously have compromised wells and overturned tanks. We've seen sheens on the surface of the water. Now, that indicates to me that those lighter materials, the benzenes, toluenes, they're going to evaporate out and dissipate in the atmosphere. But the question is, what remains behind? These dense non-aqueous liquids, these heavy crude, is going to sink now into these sediments. In fact, the water pressure itself can push it down into the groundwater. So we could be left with dozens of contaminated sites here as people return.
What do you think about the way that the state has responded, or the EPA, to this disaster?
Well, you know, I don't know what they've done exactly. I understand the EPA maybe put some boots on the ground and start doing some sampling like they did post-Katrina. And that'll be critical to find out if these polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons in the DNAPLs are in unhealthy concentrations at these sites. And without that government work, us citizens can't be doing this testing. The citizens have done a good job about showing the problem just with pictorially. But the government must come through.
Now, you've been campaigning against exemptions to environmental protections of natural gas for years. Would this be different, this situation, if those exemptions didn't exist?
Yes, there is some reason to believe that. If there were each individual well was subject to Clean Water Act requirements, there might be more sufficient berming requirements. And even the state should be doing, you know, not allowing them directly in the floodplain. We see wells not just within the 100-year floodplain where you have backwater, but right down close to the river where you have high-velocity water. That's wholly inappropriate for the state to be issuing those permits in those locations. When I see an event like this, this is an unprecedented event. The National Weather Service described this as a flood of biblical proportions. Indeed, it is. For example, we've had the previous record high in Boulder County was 6 inches of rain in any 1 month. In this 1 week period, there's been 18 inches of rain. We never see records obliterated to such extent. There's a lesson here. This is a climate-induced event. We must get off fossil fuels, or this will be our future. After all, here in Colorado, we've had drought, fire, and flood in the same year.
A recent poll conducted by Magellan Strategies says Coloradans are likely to vote down Amendment 66, the measure that hopes to raise $950 million in taxes for schools. According to the Denver Post, the group found that most of the likely voters that they surveyed were largely uninformed about the amendment's details. The poll asked two questions, one with minimal information about the amendment and one with more details. The survey reported that more people opposed the measure with more information. Opponents of the measure hailed the survey as proof that voters don't want a tax increase, while supporters said they were confident voters will be in favor of the increase by Election Day. Amendment 66 would raise the money for schools through a tax increase on a two-tiered system, depending on income levels. Education News Colorado reports the campaign supporting the amendment has so far raised around $3 million. Colorado firefighters say the state needs to make major changes in order to protect the public from increasingly devastating wildfires. As Benta Berkland reports, State lawmakers are hoping to tackle the issue during the next legislative session.
A top concern for Gary Breeze is the frequency of wildfires.
Absolutely, the increasing number and severity of wildfires. 10,000 wildfires in less than 2 years is an astronomical number.
Breeze is the executive director of the Colorado State Fire Chiefs. He testified before lawmakers on the Wildfire Matters Review Committee on Monday. Breeze says homeowners living in the wildland-urban interface need to take responsibility for protecting their own homes. And he says the state should consider new laws.
That's a real fine balance between desire to have regulation, and especially into something this that risk, that puts people's lives and property at risk, and then the desire for independence and living in the forest.
According to Paul Cook with the state's Division of Fire Prevention and Control, Colorado doesn't have a statewide standard.
There are areas in the state that do not have any fire protection standards. There's a few places that have no building code. Most states do have a statewide minimum standard.
There's also the issue of updating and maintaining the radio communication system for firefighters. Republican Senator Ellen Roberts of Durango sits on the Wildfire Committee. She says it's crucial.
I don't know how we ignore the importance of that, both for firefighter safety, but for the job we're asking them to do.
Lawmakers are still trying to calculate just how much money it would take to maintain a new radio system, but the cost would be significant. The state fire chiefs also say the fabric of firefighting is steadily changing. Gary Breeze says it's getting harder and harder for rural communities to rely on volunteer firefighters because the job is becoming more demanding.
Not only do you have to have time for emergencies, you have to have time for training, you have to have time for fundraising, you know, and people are just going, I don't have time for this anymore. I want to do it, I just don't have time to do it.
Governor John Hickenlooper has convened a separate task force to study the wildfire issue. Fire experts say all the rain and moisture over the summer has increased vegetation. That means next year's fire season could be even worse. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
A lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or TABOR, reached the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals on Sunday as the court heard oral arguments over whether to proceed with the suit. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports the suit was filed in 2011 and claims that TABOR violates the U.S. Constitution because it takes away the right of state and local officials to impose taxes. Former Colorado Congressman David Skaggs, attorney for the plaintiffs in the case, said TABOR stands in the way of the state legislature funding the state government. But the state attorney general's office says the issue is political and shouldn't be addressed by the courts. At the heart of TABOR is a rule that any tax increase is in the state has to be approved by voters rather than the state or local governments. The state last year tried to claim the suit was an attack on Colorado's initiative and referendum process. That argument was rejected by a U.S. district judge. The Wright Opera House in Ouray has been awarded a $60,000 grant from the Colorado-based Gates Family Foundation. According to the Telluride Watch, that money will go towards interior renovations and a new elevator. But the Watch reports the Opera House will only receive the grant money if they raise an additional $200,000 towards the project's final goal of $350,000. Wright Opera House Executive Director Josh Gowans said he hopes to raise that money by the end of this year. If that happens, construction would start this year and the new elevator would be running by next summer. The Watch reports the venue will likely close for a month during construction. Olathe officials still aren't saying much about the suspension of Olathe Police Chief Rick Hawk. As the Montrose Daily Press reports, Acting Town Administrator Patty Gabriel confirmed that Hawk has been placed on administrative leave but wouldn't elaborate on the details, saying it was inappropriate to talk about the issue until an ongoing investigation is resolved. According to the Daily Press, the investigation is about an administrative matter. Gabriel hasn't given a timeline for the investigation. Veteran Sergeant Justin Perry is set to take over as police chief on October 7th. San Miguel County Commissioners voted last week to approve local licensing standards for retail marijuana businesses in unincorporated areas of the county. According to the Telluride Daily Planet, the county approved a dual licensing scheme where applicants will have to get a retail marijuana license from the state and from the county. The county will also adopt as its own the 8 priorities for marijuana enforcement outlined by the U.S. Department of Justice last month. Commissioners also voted in a number of restrictions on marijuana businesses, such as being 1,000 feet away from schools, colleges, or child care facilities, as well as drug and alcohol rehabilitation centers. Commissioners will be the local licensing authority for the county. Mike Rozicki, the county's planning director, said marijuana grow houses were the most likely types of businesses to open up in unincorporated areas. The Watch reports some Norwood and Wrights Mesa area residents told commissioners at last week's meeting that they're opposed to such facilities in their backyards. One resident claimed allowing the facilities in the Wrights Mesa area would affect insurance rates and raise the cost of living. And on a related note, Colorado is the first state in the country to adopt final rules for recreational marijuana businesses. The Denver Post reports the rules, released late yesterday, cover everything from pot shop licensing to inventory tracking to packaging and advertising. They also represent the most comprehensive effort to date to take the once all-illegal marijuana market and harness it into what supporters say will be controlled, refined legitimacy. Applications to open a recreational marijuana store can be filed starting in only 3 weeks. The first stores are expected to open around January 1st of next year. Officials in Washington are writing rules, the state of Washington, that is, are writing rules for their recreational marijuana industry and are expecting to finish the task in October. For a list highlighting some of the rules, check out today's Denver Post. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, this is Brian Cambria.